We're open for business live.
Good morning. It's just after 9 o'clock on Friday, the 5th of June, 2015. My name is Jamie Veitch. I'm your presenter for the next hour for Sheffield Live's business and social enterprise programme, Business Live. We're broadcasting live on 93.2 FM and through our internet live stream from sheffieldlive.org. This show will also be available as a podcast later from the Sheffield Live website. In today's show, we have interviews with a number of interesting and diverse businesses who I met at the ChefX exhibition that took place earlier this week on Monday. It was packed. Were you there? Well, tune in. And we'll also hear from Melanie Rippon of the South Yorkshire International Trade Centre and Sean Litchfield of Mycom Components Limited. Plus, James Butler, Public Affairs Manager at Social Enterprise UK, will talk about the impact and the potential effect of the first majority Conservative government for nearly two decades and how this will affect social enterprises. Tom Chapelow of Nimbox is going to talk with us about data security. And we have an interview with Nick Wright of Ernest Wright and Son. You might have seen their video, which went viral earlier this year, and it was literally a lifesaver. Before we turn to our interviews and our guests, just a quick plug of a couple of forthcoming events. Coming up on the 25th of June, there's an event called Social Investment, Making It Work for Social Enterprises. This is taking place in Manchester, but it's well worth going to wherever you are. It's being put on by Resonance Cooperatives UK, the Community Shares Unit and Social Enterprise UK. It's an afternoon workshop. It's all about social investment, which is a hot topic, but it's sometimes fine to hard the most relevant information and know-how and how to access it. Well, find out more at this event in Manchester, 25th of June, 2:30 p.m. until 6 p.m. and you can find tickets at Eventbrite. Go on to eventbrite.co.uk and look up Social Investment, Making It Work for Social Enterprises, and that is on the 25th of June. Also forthcoming, building on the success of the Business Summit programme, Sheffield City Council want to invite Sheffield businesses to their first Superfast Broadband Summit of 2015, taking place at 8 a.m. on Monday the 22nd of June at Sheffield Town Hall. This is going to focus on Superfast Broadband. Access to affordable, reliable Superfast Broadband is an important aspect for every business. The Council's strategy say they recognise how important this is to the city's economy, and they want to discuss their ambitions for digital connectivity as a city and raise awareness of the support that is available to businesses. Specifically, there are going to be discussions on the Sheffield's Connection Voucher Scheme as a way to upgrade internet connectivity. Reserve a place, just email david.campbell-molloy, M-O-L-L-O-Y, at sheffield.gov.uk. So turning now to our first interview. Earlier this week, I caught up with Mel Rippon of the South Yorkshire International Trade Centre and with one of her clients, Sean Litchfield of Mycom Components Limited. Mycom were under pressure. One of their biggest customers went bust, leaving them with a 100,000-plus hole. But out of that enormous near disaster has come a really interesting recovery story. And I found out more when I talked with Mel and Sean earlier this week. We're going to play the interview now. So we're talking exporting now. I'm really pleased to be meeting up with Melanie Rippon of South Yorkshire International Trade Centre and with Sean Litchfield of Mycom Components Limited. Melanie, Sean, hi. Thanks very much for joining me today.
No problem. Hello.
So I've asked you to talk with me today because SYITC, been on this radio programme before a few times, your colleague Nick's been on, and you help lots of businesses here in Sheffield, Mel, with exporting and provide advice. And Sean of Mycom Components is one of your clients.
Yes, that's correct. Fairly new to us, only in recent months. We've come into contact with Sean and his partner Steve at Mycom Components, and we're hoping to help them out over the coming months.
And what is it, Sean, that Mycom does? What do you make? How many people work for you?
Predominantly, we're a CNC machinist. Yeah. We have 14 employees. We've also got a fastener side that produces U-bolts and small fasteners in various materials, i.e. stainless, mild steel, and obviously different finishes, PZP, galvanised, or whatever people require.
And how many people work for you?
There's 14 employees total. Sorry.
And you're turning over about?
950,000 a year.
Yeah, so a near million turnover.
Near million turnover, yeah.
And at the moment, as I understand it, you're not exporting, you haven't been exporting to date, but you have now secured overseas orders, is that right?
We have secured overseas orders, which will take us through to probably the end of this year so far, which we need to get running. We have applied for his export licence through SYITC with their help, and it's ongoing at the moment.
And where are those orders? What parts of the world?
They're in the UAE, i.e. Dubai, Abu Dhabi, that area, obviously Middle East.
And what was it then that prompted you to get in touch with the South Yorkshire International Trade Centre and the team here?
Going back to January, February, our biggest customer went into administration, taking us for a hell of a lot of money. Not knowing where to turn, we were there struggling between us as employees, where do we go from here? We got a phone call out of the blue from the customer in the United Arab Emirates asking if we would still be willing to supply the parts we were supplying to the company that went into administration, whether we still supply direct.
Direct, yeah.
So we, not knowing how to get into export, obviously said we'd like to. Got a phone call to Nick and his team. Nick's come round. We've now got into applying for it, and the customer is now placing orders with us.
So that's tremendous, and this really is a case of this presumably will save the company from being at risk of damage after one of your large customers went into administration. I mean, that must have been very, very worrying.
That really was very worrying. It did damage us. We're not out of the woods yet.
No.
It will help us a long way to getting back to where we want to get to. And it's opened his eyes into different things we could export, because we'd not looked into as fastener side of the business. So the fastener side, as we've spoken to Nick and his team, Nick and Mel, saying, well, why don't you have a look at this? He's now going to look at that next year.
So, Mel, when a customer like Sean comes to you, comes and approaches SYITC, you're obviously helping them with an immediate need, but also you're then able to open their eyes to other opportunities in terms of exporting.
Yeah, and I think especially in the case of Micon as well, they weren't aware that our services existed before running into this particular area of difficulty that they got with their customer. So it's nice to be able to help out companies who find themselves in that situation and, you know, and show them the services that we offer that can help them through and get going with what they need to do.
So this then becomes something, a real concrete example of expert advice and support that helps your business, Sean, in terms of moving into new markets, protecting those 14 jobs and hopefully growing the business significantly as well.
Yes, it does, yes.
Yeah, great. And SYITC is running events as well, Overseas Business Network events, that help businesses like yours and other businesses.
Yes, we've been to three between us now. We went to one, a lady come over from Dubai, did a lovely presentation explaining what adventures there were out there, what we could get into, how to do it, and obviously working with Nick and Mel, we can look at these opportunities. Again, we sat in a thing with Graham Cole.
Yeah.
Who was trying to get across to the government about exporting and what help people need into getting into exporting, and that was really eye-opening. And again, we was in with a Slovakian lady, I think it was, and she explained getting into that area, that market.
So really, really helpful then.
Very helpful, yeah.
So it sounds as though SYITC has been a helping hand right when you needed it. Had you come across SYITC before you got in touch with them, and how did you hear about them?
By chance, really. Obviously, we got into this through this new customer abroad, and not knowing what to do, it was pick up a phone and say, look, we've got this chance of exporting, where do we go from here? And then obviously Nick shot across with Mel and said, look, this is what we need to do, this is where we need to go. But we'd have never looked at it prior to that, because I think small companies are really, really busy, and it's hard get into that kind of thing. And we'd never even thought about exporting. We were busy within Sheffield or the UK with us fastener business, and we'd never even looked into exporting. So it's a new horizon for us.
And that's the case for lots and lots of businesses, and they're merrily ticking along, and they've got their customers here in the UK, but then something like this happens, and this has been the catalyst for you. But actually, what a great opportunity now, and if you can develop the business worldwide, fantastic.
It is a great opportunity. It's something we need to push to move this business on. We can't be reliant on as smaller customers, we need to push ourselves out there.
And you must then be very happy with SYITC.
Absolutely happy. Yeah, they've been absolutely fantastic with us. Everything we've asked them, they've answered. No problem at all.
Superb. And Mel, from your point of view, it must be really, really satisfying to hear this from Sean, but also to see the effect that the intervention and the support that you give.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think especially for Sean and Steve at Micon as well, I think they've got a great product that will do well overseas. Mm. You mentioned the Slovakia, the OBN event that
That's
we ran.
Right, yeah.
The lady that came over, there is a big market there for automotive, which your product would be...
The U-Boats could be
ideal
accustomed
for.
To that,
yeah. Yeah, so there is a market there, and that's just the tip of the iceberg, really, because with all the OBN events that we're doing, there's 41 different countries. There's a hell of a lot to tap into, and I think, you know, it's a good start. It's
it could be good for you.
Superb. Well, all the best with that, Sean. I'm sure it will be. And Mel, where do people find out more then about not only the OBN events but also SYITC and the support that you can offer?
Well, you can find us here. We're based right in the heart of Sheffield. You can visit the website. It's www.syitc.com. Or you can give us a ring on 0114-201-8888. You know, come in and see us. We're based on Savile Street, just off the Wicker in Sheffield. So, yeah, come and have a chat. There's a team of us here. We're all ready to help.
Superb. Mel, thanks very much for joining me today. Sean, thank you too. And where can people find out more about Micon?
We've got our own website, www.miconcomponents.com. And obviously, we're just based off Carlisle Street on Fawnsett Street. If people want to come along and look at what we are, we haven't got a problem with that at all.
Sean Litchfield, Micon Components Limited, and Melanie Rippon, South Yorkshire International Trade Centre. Thanks very much for joining me today.
Thank you.
We're open for Business Live.
You're listening to Business Live on Sheffield Live, broadcasting on 93.2 FM and from sheffieldlive.org across Sheffield and the world. My name's Jamie Veach. That was an interview recorded 2 days ago this week with Melanie Rippon of the South Yorkshire International Trade Centre and Sean Litchfield of Micon Components Limited. Now, I'm delighted to be joined on the line now with James Butler, the Public Affairs Manager at Social Enterprise UK. James leads SE UK's programme of political work, getting the social enterprise sector's voice heard in government. James, good morning.
Good morning, Jamie.
Thanks very much for joining me today. And I know you've done ever such a lot of work on the Social Economy Alliance and managing also the Secretariat for the All-Party Parliamentary Group on social enterprise. So you've been quite close to and watching the political sphere, and of course we now have a majority Conservative government, the first for nearly 20 years. Lots of social enterprises are wondering how is that going to affect them, and perhaps I thought you could help.
Oh, thank you. It's a very interesting question. I think the most striking feature of the Queen's speech, which lays out the government's forthcoming legislative agenda, is really a high level of continuity. So for the last 5 years, we've had a moderate right of centre government, which has had been influenced by the Liberal Democrats and perhaps is not as right-wing and free market as some on the right of the Conservative Party would want. And looking at the legislative programme for the next 5 years, we've got a moderate right of centre political party with, again, a fairly moderate programme of government and limited in their action somewhat by a small majority. So I think what we're seeing is a high degree of continuity over the last 5 years and looking into the future for the next 5 years.
So that is interesting. So social enterprises know what the political support or political... how the current government has supported social enterprise is likely to, it's likely to be a continuation of the last 5 years. Now, you have talked about a legislative programme that's coming up, and this has been outlined in the Queen's speech, and there are going to be a few initiatives which will have an impact. Do you want to talk me through some of those?
Well, indeed. Perhaps the flagship bill, which the government will hope to become an act of parliament, is the Full Employment and Welfare Benefits Bill.
Indeed.
That has both challenges and opportunities to the sector and indeed for society. So perhaps the most striking feature of it is the benefits cap, which was at £26,000 a year and will be reduced to £23,000 a year. Now, that's the sum total of benefits that an individual or a family is entitled to, and include housing benefit and the like.
Yes.
What the government is very clear it wants to do is have a kind of a making work pay attitude to benefit, and they want to move people away from benefits and into employment. And the reduction in support for the benefits cap will be used to fund apprenticeships and a work programme, and that's very clearly something that social enterprises who work in that sector will be well placed to take advantage of and help transition people from unemployment to employment or employment readiness.
And these apprenticeships and the training and support need to be of a very high quality to ensure that the young people that take them up are ready then for employment, and they're not move from apprenticeship to apprenticeship to apprenticeship, I guess.
The government is very clear on that. How that actually translates is a more problematic issue, I suppose. And I think a number of us, perhaps you included, who maybe grew up in the north in the 80s, might not necessarily think of a Conservative government as being committed to full employment. What's striking about the Queen's speech for us older folk, perhaps, is that the government is committing to a statutory duty to report annually on progress towards achieving a high employment rate. Now, that's revelatory, I think, for some of us who grew up in the 80s in the north, who perhaps think of the Conservative government as kind of a much harder-edged political party. They seem to have softened. They do seem to have moved, and maybe that's been reflected by, as you say, the first Conservative majority government for nearly 20 years.
So, again, I suppose that resonates with what you said in your introduction here about the government likely to feel like a continuation of the last 5 years, albeit we have a different government than we have had, but it's likely to feel like a continuation. Interesting in terms of how that will affect us. And yes, I mean, as you mentioned, the employment and the association of the Conservatives with that, you've commented further about that on the Social Enterprise UK blog. So reducing the benefit cap to pay for the increase in apprenticeships from 26 to 23,000, how's that likely to affect vulnerable people in society, particularly, I suppose, in parts of the South where housing costs are higher?
I don't think there's any doubt that this will hurt some of the most vulnerable in society, and I think that is an issue for all of those involved in social enterprise who are in it for the right reasons to create social justice and make Britain and the UK and indeed the world a better place to live in and work in. It is problematic for social enterprises. On the one hand, they see a need to for their services, and I think, without getting too technical, you will see people moving out from inner London to outer London. That means longer commutes. That means less convenient housing and transport patterns.
Okay.
It's not a measure that instinctively perhaps looks like it's there to deliver natural justice. And given that the jobs tend to be in the centre of urban settlements, that the longer commutes will pay their toll. pay a price, I'm sure.
And let's move on then to the Enterprise Bill and the intention of the government to create a small business conciliation service. Now, this is aimed, I believe, to help settle disputes between small businesses and large businesses. Is that going to be? Is that going to have a measurable impact, a demonstrable impact on social enterprise?
Well, I mean, of course, the big picture is that in hand in hand with clamping down on benefit and encourage people transitioning to work, is that the government wants to create an environment that's pro-business and supportive of SMEs in particular, and we've seen a range of measures around government procurement to open that up. And the Enterprise Bill is very much in that mould. We know small businesses have problems with cash flow. We know even that large businesses that deal with government departments have problems with cash flow sometimes. And whilst the Small Business Conciliation Service is a welcome initiative, it's whether that actually translates into a change in corporate behaviour is a kind of a moot point, I suppose. It's very easy sitting in Westminster for ministers to try and pull a lever. It's harder to see whether that necessarily translates into a cultural change that benefits small businesses. But it's welcome. Let's see how it progresses.
Okay, great. It's welcome as long as it works. and yes, sometimes it's easy to make pronouncements, isn't it? But for policymakers to make pronouncements, I mean, but translating those into reality is key and crucial. Moves us on then to the childcare bill and the entitlement for free childcare, which is being raised to 30 hours or 38 weeks of the year to be made eligible for parents of 3 and 4 year olds. So this is about free childcare in terms of, again, supporting the economy, supporting people into work. Again, we don't probably know enough yet about how those plans are going to be implemented, do we?
No, I think that's correct. The Queen's speech is really a series of bullet points, and the detail comes out in the bills and indeed in the statutory guidance that associates with the bill. So sometimes it's very difficult to see exactly how something will be implemented until actually the policy implementation happens.
Yes.
Nonetheless, I think the cost of childcare is a huge burden, and very many people who are, you know, in houses with mortgages, they will find themselves paying more for childcare than they do on mortgage payments.
Yes.
So it's very welcome for those. It's very welcome for social enterprises with returners from maternity leave.
Yeah.
And I think the government knows this is a vote winner. They brought it forward. It was probably more expected to be in the second or third year of the government.
Yes.
And yeah. Again, the Conservatives, they want to see a broad, diverse economy, a smaller state. So we'll see, I imagine, the childcare bill try and promote diversity of choice amongst providers, and I think that's a key point. So it's not just about state-run providers. I think some smaller businesses and childcare, very often one or two individuals running a small business, I think we'll see a growth in that.
Okay, right, that could be interesting. So then let's move on to housing and the extension of the right to buy to a housing association tenants, and government providing the ability and cash in terms of discounts for individuals to purchase a flat or a house from a housing association. And there's been widespread discussion about these proposals from people within the housing association sector Chartered Institute of Housing, National Housing Federation as well. And quite a lot of people have been concerned about how the policy affects on the supply of affordable housing too. Now, you've commented on the Social Enterprise UK blog that it will benefit some individual tenants, but it's a poor solution to the big picture of long-term problems in the housing market. But you've talked about an idea that might be worth exploring that could mitigate some of its weaknesses, and I wondered if you could expand on that.
Yes, I mean, we're looking at the idea of a right to buy together.
Yeah.
And, I mean, I don't want to go too much into detail with this because it is, we're just exploring it as an idea and talking to colleagues and partners in the sector. But the idea that we've got is to explore whether the government would be prepared to allow individuals to come together to create their own social enterprises or cooperative or mutual arrangements within the right to buy framework. So if you take a typical individual who might want to take advantage of the right to buy, that's great. But as we know, being a leaseholder isn't for everybody. They may want to remain in a cooperative or a social enterprise framework, but maybe not perhaps satisfied with the service that they receive from that particular housing association. So we're exploring whether it might be possible to tweak what the government proposes in order to set up their own more locally based cooperative.
Okay, so that interesting, and watch this space as you explore that. That sounds interesting. James, you've also talked about some of the other proposals. The Citizen Local Government Devolution Bill is potentially going to have quite an impact at local level outside of London and giving the power to commission services locally. How is that likely to affect social enterprises?
On one level, it's a strong level of continuity from what the government's already done, and it makes it easier for the government to achieve what it wants to do. So we've seen in Greater Manchester, for example, a deal between the Treasury and the local authorities there where they come together to create a strong mayor who is accountable for the actions in the area. So the bill is to make it easier to have those negotiations.
Okay.
Now, as part of that, they need to push down power. So local procurement will be much more locally based. There'll also be an emphasis on, we hope, more holistic procurement and delivery of services. And that's where the smart mayors will take advantage of the Social Value Act, which, of course, SUK was thoroughly behind and supportive of.
Indeed.
So we're hoping that with greater devolution, we'll see more sensible, pragmatic and locally tailored solutions to procurement and commissioning and delivery of services. And that's something SUK is very keen on working with local mayors to achieve. We've already done that somewhat with our places scheme, which with support from Santander is highlighting and recognising and celebrating indeed the achievements of local authorities with social enterprises. But I think with the increased commitment of the government to transfer power locally, I think that's something that we can really help to work with local authorities and mayors to achieve better outcomes for people in those areas.
Okay, that's interesting. And you just alluded to, you mentioned the Social Value Act. That's been law now since January 2013. And for listeners who are aware of that, you'll be well aware of the implications for social enterprise. Those who aren't, Social Value Act means that all public bodies in England and in Wales are now required to consider how services that they commission and they procure might improve the economic, the social and the environmental well-being of the area. So that then, and as you say, James, SEUK is instrumental in making that Social Value Act reality, making it law. A lot of social enterprises that I speak with in Sheffield and around the UK, I tend to find that perhaps one in two are aware of Social Value Act, and some don't yet realise that it's there, and it can be a real force for positive procurement and commissioning.
That's right. We've seen a growth in, and your kind of 50% figure, I think, is about right. We do a biannual survey of social enterprises across the UK, and we are seeing 40 to 50%, if not more, recognise the Social Value Act. But it is dependent on local councils using it properly, and that is an obstacle that us as a membership body are keen to get hold of, both politicians and professional commissioners to really explore and use. The Act is an interesting one. It's very flexible. It can be used to deliver the political aspirations of local authorities. So in Durham, for example, they're working with local businesses. In some of the local authorities in London, which are cooperative councils, they're moving to more cooperative arrangements with local organisations.
Yes.
It's a very flexible tool, but it is dependent on how effectively it is used within the local authority or the public service more generally.
Okay, great. Well, that's helpful to know. Thanks, James. And there's lots more that we could discuss, but sadly we've come to the end of our segment. James, I want to thank you very much for joining me today, but I'd also like to flag that listeners who want to know more about your comments on the Queen's speech can go to socialenterprise.org.uk, click on the news tab, and you've written about the potential impact and effect of the forthcoming legislative agenda on social enterprises. And people can, of course, find out more about Social Enterprise UK at your website, socialenterprise.org.uk as well. So, James, thank you very much for joining me today.
Thank you, Jamie.
We're going to play a track of music which you've chosen and you tell me is by your first and most enduring musical love, Talking Heads.
That's right. It may not be an obvious choice for someone growing up in Bradford in the 80s, but for some reason I kind of, that's the band that I went to. And shall I talk about the track?
Please do.
It's Don't Worry About the Government, which I think is slightly ironic, but given we've been talking about legislation and governments, I think it's somehow appropriate.
Well, James Butler, Public Affairs Manager, Social Enterprise UK, thanks very much for joining me today. We'll play Talking Heads, Don't Worry About the Government.
We're open for Business Live.
You're listening to Business Live on Sheffield Live, broadcasting on 93.2 FM and from sheffieldlive.org. My name's Jamie Veitch. We've heard earlier today from James Butler, the Public Affairs Manager at Social Enterprise UK. And before that, we were speaking with Melanie Rippon of South Yorkshire International Trade Centre and Sean Litchfield of Mycom Components Limited. Now, data security. Why is it important? How do we protect our data? Well, an innovative Yorkshire-based company, Nimbox, has launched a new alternative product for data security. I caught up with their MD, Tom Chapelow, at the ChefX exhibition on Monday. We're going to play the interview with Tom now. So, Tom of Nimbox, thanks for joining me today here at ChefX. First of all, what does Nimbox do?
Nimbox provides privacy as a service. We enable customers to control their data in the public domain without worrying about backdoors, encryption vulnerabilities, hackers, or government spying.
And I understand you're one of only a very small number of companies doing this worldwide.
Indeed, yes. So we're the only UK-based company that's providing products of this nature. We're one of three in Europe and one of five in the world. It's a very niche set of services, but one that are really powerful. They give the use and privacy back to the user instead of corporations.
So tell me about the user experience. As a user of Nimbox, how is it different for me than an alternative provider if I use Nimbox to protect my privacy?
It thinks for you. It makes your day much easier. Instead of having to click 10 buttons to conduct a function, we make you click one. And in some cases, we click it for you. We don't complicate encryption. We make your business life easier. We make your personal life easier, all whilst protecting you at the same time.
And what's your process of protecting the data then? How is it protected?
We use a number of open source cryptography standards and a number of proprietary in-house software that we've built to drive the engines. When you sign up to our service, you create a username and password. Out of that, we create an encryption key on your behalf. That process is entirely open source and transparent and can be audited by any of our users. You retain that encryption key. It is never passed to our system, meaning that when you upload a file, it's encrypted with your key, and we cannot access that file. even if our system is breached on the back end, all we see is your encrypted data. And the only way we can access that is if you email us a password. And we recommend you don't do that.
No, wise recommendations there, I'm sure. So that then means that if someone were to serve a warrant against you, or if your system was to be breached, the data is still secure.
Absolutely. So as a law-abiding company incorporated in the UK, we're very transparent with how we deal with warrants, in that we will always comply to the full extent of the law with warrants that are served on us. However, we still can't breach any data. So we hold very little information about the clients. We hold an email address, and that is it. If you don't want to tell us who you are, where you live, you don't have to. So we will comply with the warrant. We still can't hand over your data. At the same time, if somebody hacks our system, which hasn't happened in 5 years, and that's how long we've been here, if somebody hacks our system, again, they still can't get any data. So you're completely secure.
And as you say, you've been going for 5 years now and getting this business up to scale. Next steps, global ambitions?
Certainly. So we're already seeing traction in the Far East, especially in countries where perhaps freedom of speech and freedom of movement is not as enshrined in law as perhaps it is in Europe. So certainly our next step is to put a permanent foothold in the Far East, in Singapore, going into China and such. And that is really where our focus is on right now. At the same time, we're trying to grow our tech business in the UK, using employees that are trained and educated in the UK. So to that end, we're funding heavily in apprenticeship schemes and getting cyber skills into the UK economy to help fund global growth.
And how many employees do you have now?
13.
13. And Sheffield base?
Leeds based. Yeah.
And ChefX, part of your growth strategy?
ChefX is definitely part of our growth strategy. We realise that perhaps the largest market that we're missing out on is the small and medium businesses that are new to the digital world, or if they are using digital services, they're using large corporate American digital services, because they don't know that there are others available. We aim to show people that actually they can buy local, they can put money into the local economy, and by coming to shows like this, we can really compound that message that actually there are people locally. You don't need to send the money to the United States. Corporate executives don't need that much. Actually, buy local, employ local, and get better.
So people like the sound of that. They can find out more about Nimbox online.
They can. Yep, they can visit www.nimbox.co.uk and you can sign up online, you can get a 14-day free trial, and you can ask us any questions that you may have.
Tom of Nimbox, thanks very much for joining me.
Thank you.
We're open for Business Live.
You're listening to Business Live on Sheffield Live with me, Jamie Veitch. We're broadcasting on 93.2 FM and from sheffieldlive.org across Sheffield and the world. And that was an interview with Tom Chapelow talking about an innovative new data security business, Nimbox. ChefX on Monday of this week, we met lots and lots of other interesting and diverse businesses, and we're going to play a number of interviews with those businesses now.